If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, I'm Sean Dixon, and this is the Let's Get Running podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'd really love your help in trying to grow the show, so if you like it, it'd be great if you can share it. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or just tell someone else that you like it. Now, it's been a big week in the world of athletics. We've just had the UK trials for the Rio Olympics last weekend. We've also had the team for the European Championships at the beginning of July announced this week. And this week there was a massive drugs bust in Spain. One of the world's most famous coaches, Jamal Aydin, who is current coach of probably the best runner in the world, Gunzebe Dibaba, but also the former coach of world's most unlikable athlete, Tariqi Mukluffi. Jamal was caught with 60 vials of EPO at a training camp, which a lot of athletes were in attendance. And he's not just linked to the athletes he coaches. He's had dealings with Tunish Dibaba, my personal idol. Unfortunately, there is talk of two British athletes who have been involved in training camps with Jamal, and it's looking like a really big scandal. I'm a bit of an optimist, and I'm really hoping that these performances by the Dibabas aren't showing up to be influenced by drugs. Really, really depressing. On a brighter note, the UK trials happened this weekend, as I mentioned. And again, the main headline from the event was the fantastic performance of Scottish athletes. I think there's 12 of them qualified now for Rio, which is very impressive. One of the most impressive runs this weekend was from Andy Butcher, the 5,000 metre runner. He eased away from a very strong field in the 5,000 metres to win in 13:44. There were also some good endurance performances from Laura Muir and Chris O'Hare, who both qualified for Rio, and an impressive 1-2-3 from the ladies in the 5,000 metres. That was from Steph Twell, Ellis McColgan and Laura Whittle. Now, if you've listened to the previous episodes, I spoke to both Robbie Simpson and Beth Potter, I think it was in episodes 3 and 4, about the reasons for this recent Scottish upsurge in performance. And one of the interesting things that Robbie said was that he felt he was given loads of opportunities to pull on the Scottish vest as a young runner. And this experience, this chance to compete for their country, made them believe they could compete against the very best. And that's a really interesting point. And I guess with a smaller pool of athletes to choose from, that opportunity is more likely to be regular, so you're not going to lose your place after a couple of bad runs or drop from the selectors' thoughts. Whereas, I guess in England, where there's a greater pool to choose from, there's 10 or 12 athletes fighting for the same vest, you're more likely to lose your place if you don't quite perform up to standards. Back in the golden days of 2013, I had a bit of a purple patch of running myself, and I think that was largely due to the confidence I gained from a couple of cross-country England vests over the winter. Going and racing and staying in the hotel with other top athletes, and you realise that they're not superhuman, you can compete with these people, and I think people draw confidence from that. In light of that, it's brilliant to hear the news that we've announced the biggest ever British team for the European Championships this week, which is excellent news. It gives those guys an opportunity to race top quality opposition, and I think that's the only way they're really going to develop. There's lots of endurance events I'm looking forward to. We've got Let's Get Running podcast interviewee Johnny Davis going in the 5,000 alongside Johnny Taylor. Should be great, that, the two Johnnies. We've got the three Scottish ladies, as I mentioned, going for medals in the 5,000 for the women. The 1500 metres is looking really strong for us at the moment. It'd be interesting to see how Tom Lancashire bounces back from his fall in the trials. I think he was on course to run pretty well. In the 10,000 metres, you've got a chance for both Dowie Griffiths and Andy Vernon to run qualifying times for Rio. It's good to see Andy given a chance to get back in a British vest. And for the women, perhaps a swan song for Jo Pavey. She's running the 10,000 metres. I have a feeling she might surprise a few people in that race too. The event I'm most looking forward to ever is the half marathon team event. That's going to be really exciting. It's a new addition to this year's championships. And obviously for me, I'm living in Amsterdam now, so it's going to be great. I can go and watch these guys run around the city, which I'm really looking forward to. But also we've named a really strong team. So a lot of the guys in the men's team are also running the marathon in the Olympics. So we've got the Hawkins brothers competing. Also Matt Bond, who was rewarded for a good performance in London this year, ran 2:15. It's nice to see him get a chance to run in the championships. And for the women, we've got a really cracking team. It should be a chance to pick up a couple of strong medals there in that team event. Now, this week's interviewee will actually be competing in that race, as well as the marathon in Rio. She's currently Britain's number one at the marathon. It's Ali Dixon. Here she is. So, Ali, you're preparing for the Olympic Games at the moment. Whereabouts are you based now?
Yeah, just now I'm up in Fontremont in the French Pyrenees. So I've been here for 2 weeks now. I've got another roughly 2 weeks and then I'll head down to Amsterdam for the European half marathon. And then I'll come back up here for, I think it's about 3 weeks before heading out to Brazil for the Holden camp.
And how's it been going training-wise? You feeling in good shape?
Yeah, everything's been going as planned. I've had a few days where, you know, things, there can be a bit of a struggle. I'm doing high mileage, kind of 110 mile a week. And obviously you've got all the hills around here and the altitude. So it's kind of probably the equivalent of 115, 120 back at home. And you do have days where you're just feeling tired and you're just dragging your body along. But it's kind of those days where you've got to get out there and you've got to get the work done. But track session's gone really well. I've got my second track session tomorrow. Long runs, which, you know, that's the bread and butter for me of the marathon training and the long runs, and they've gone really well. So yeah, everything's on track and where I want it to be just now.
And those long runs, are you running those at kind of goal marathon pace, or are you kind of just getting out there and covering the miles at the moment?
At the minute it's just kind of more getting back into the long runs, because we're obviously on such a short turnaround from London into Rio. I've cut it down to only 9 weeks build-up instead of the usual kind of 11 or 12. But I came into it in really good shape and having already banked, you know, the long runs just not that long ago for London. So, yeah, I still do them at a decent pace. Yesterday's kind of I got down to just over 6 minute mile and for the last 10 mile. But trying to hit marathon pace up here, you've got to work actually quite hard for it. So I've more go on like my heart rate. So I know roughly what zone my heart rate should be in for marathon effort. And that normally equates to about the 6 minute mile and up here.
What's the course like in Rio? Is it fairly flat or?
I'm not 100% sure, actually. I've been like trying to find out some information about it. I've seen this very sketchy map, which doesn't really tell you much apart from it runs along the seafront towards Sugarloaf Mountain, but I haven't seen any elevation chart and I'm not sure kind of how hilly Rio itself is, so I'm not sure if it's going to be flat or have a few inclines in, but I dare say I'll find out over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and your long runs now, so you're running them in quite undulating terrain.
Yeah, we do drop down a little bit. There's a big lake about 20 minutes drive from town. So we drop down to there and it's just through forests and it is a lot of up and down. I think yesterday I had about 3,000 foot of climb across the 24 mile. So they are preparing us. If there is any hills over in Rio, I should be able to cope with them after spending about nearly 8 weeks up here. So yeah, they're good for your leg strength as well.
And who's coming up with your training plan? Are you self-coached at the moment?
Yeah, I'm self-coached. I've been self-coached since 2012. So I have a few people that I bounce ideas off. I have somebody that I run the whole kind of plan over once I've formulated it. And then it's just a case of being really honest with yourself. You know, if you're feeling tired, do you need a rest or are you just being a bit soft and going, oh, I can't be bothered today? So it does get quite hard at times because sometimes if it's written down in your plan, you're like, well, I've got to do it because it's in my plan. Whereas if you have a coach, they go, don't be stupid, miss that. You know, what's that 5 mile run going to give you? So sometimes I do just need to kind of hold them back a little bit. And it's like when I come up here, I'd say it's worth 10% of what you do at home. But sometimes I try and do the same as at home and then I'd be like, well, why weren't my times as fast? And I just need somebody to go, well, you know, you had 1,800 metres, of course they're not going to be as fast. And you don't need to do a 15-mile tempo there. Just cut it down to 13. You're going to get, like, you know, the same amount as what you would be at home. So, yeah, sometimes it is hard, but it's worked out well. I've PB'd over every distance since I've coached myself, so yeah, I can't complain really.
And have you got any more, is there any other marathon runners joining you up in Pont Rimmer in the next few weeks?
I'm not 100% sure who's coming up, because obviously kind of teams weren't selected in that until the weekend. So at the minute, there's myself and Mo. I know Paula comes up tomorrow to help with training and everything and just look after us. But for the other athletes, I'm not 100% sure who's coming.
You qualified at London this year, having run the qualifying time back in Berlin.
Yeah.
Kind of, what was that experience like coming down in the last few miles there, being in front and knowing you were in pole position to make the Rio?
Yeah, the whole day at London was just absolutely amazing. It was like, you know, it was a marathon that I really enjoyed running. I mean, I was running around the first half and the pace had dropped for the other girls, so I was kind of getting a little bit more confident as we went on, sort of thing. But it enabled me to enjoy the crowds and soak up the atmosphere, whereas normally, you know, you go into a big city marathon, you're just looking at your splits every time, going, oh, that's a second too slow, I need to pick up, and that kind of thing. I was actually quite surprised that we ran as slow as we did, because I thought the other girls were going to go for the sub 2:31 qualification time. But by eight miles, we'd already dropped off that pace. By halfway, we were, you know, they'd need a pretty big negative split. And my race plan was to get to 20 miles, feeling comfortable. If there was anybody else around us, put in a hard 3 to 4 miles, hopefully drop them, and then just enjoy the last few miles. And that's pretty much what happened. Came around Big Ben and the crowds there were just, you know, they were massive, they were absolutely amazing. And it was at that point when I started thinking, this is it, I'm going to the Olympics. But then you were also like, wait on, don't get too carried away, there's still a mile to go. You know, you could fall over or anything. It was when I came around that final corner into the mile, I looked up at the big screen, I thought I had a gap on Sonia. The crowds were going mad, the commentator was going mad, and I knew my parents and my nephew were in the grandstand not far from the finish. Coming down there, I was just looking in the grandstand for them, and I managed to see my dad and my nephew cheering. And that's when, you can see it on the TV, I turn around and kind of give them the fist pump. And pretty much from there to about 5 minutes after crossing the line, I have no recollection of what happened. Because everything just took over. It was just a case of, you know, I shouted to them, I've done it. That was it. You were just like, oh my God, I really have. And then obviously you're getting all the cameras shoved in your face and everybody shouting this way, smile this way and whatever, and, you know, flags and towels put round you. And then it wasn't until I sat down to take my shoes off just on the curb and I just burst out crying. And somebody came over like, are you okay? Do you need medical help? I was like, no, I'm going to the Olympics. But the rest of the day, it was quite bizarre because I expected to wake up and go, that was a brilliant dream, but I've now got a marathon to run. And it's sometimes still hard to believe that I have actually made it and I am going to Rio this year. And just watching the trials on the TV over the weekend and watching those guys out there still fighting for something that I already have. And there's a lot of athletes that I look at and think, you know, they're much better athletes than me, but I've already got that place and there's still a potential that they could mess up and not go. And it's just, you go through waves of emotion of, oh my God, I've eventually done it, to have I really done it, to, oh crap, what is it that I'm doing here? So, yeah, it's just, it's hard to describe, really.
Do you think of yourself as an elite athlete these days? Because you were saying at the beginning of the conversation there, like you were in Pont Rimmer now with Mo Farah, who's like one of the greatest runners of all time. It must be quite a strange feeling.
Yeah.
Do you think of yourself as an elite runner?
I do think of myself as an elite runner because, you know, obviously the things that I've achieved and I've represented Great Britain and that, but I don't think of myself a lot of the time up there as one of the best, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time it'll take other people to kind of remind me of what I've achieved and where I'm going, sort of thing, because I still class myself as a good club runner a lot of the time.
Right.
It's like, I'll do a local road race and people are like, can't believe you're doing this. I mean, you're going to Rio. I was like, yeah, but the local 10K. Why can't I, you know? Why can't I stand here in my club vest and run this 10K? I'm just the same as you guys. Like, there's a girl in my club who, she's like, oh, I'm after the club marathon record. And everybody's like, okay, good luck for that. She's like, well, I don't really class Ali as the club marathon record holder because she's an elite. I'm like, no, I'm still in this club, you know. And, yeah, it's quite strange because I've spent so many years not being at this level and then, you know, got here eventually. I think I do have a different mindset to a lot of runners that are at my level. You know, you do get some of the prima donnas that are, you know, walking around with all the swagger, look at me, I'm great. Whereas I'm like, you know, I walk into a room of athletes and I'm still like, oh my God, they're such and such. But yeah, and it's even down to last Tuesday on the track, I was chatting to Mo. He came over to see how the session had went and whatever. And he just turned around and said, oh, if you need any help with anything, just give us a shout and I'll come and help you. And you're like, really? My father's offering to hand out a bottle on a tempo. Things like that. You're just like, you know, these guys look at you as an equal, yet I'm looking at them as this super athlete sort of thing. So, yeah quite bizarre.
Well, how are you preparing for Rio? Have you got a goal in mind?
Yeah, as you said, you know, it's the biggest race of my life. It's the greatest show on earth. And for me, I know that I'm not going out there looking for medals or even a top 10. If I make a top 10, that's going to be absolutely mind-blowing performance. But I want to go out there and obviously I want to do the best that I can. So I'm getting myself in as good a shape as I can. It's probably not going to be a fast race. We're not going to be chasing times and PBs because it's a championship. Whether at the minute we're getting told that it's not going to be too bad, probably is maximum about 23, 24. So there's a lot of factors in there to say, don't put a time target on it. It's a championship. It's all about positions. Just go out there, finish up as high as you can. You know, top 20 will be an absolute dream. Anything above that is just, yeah, I think I'm going to take a lot of pinching to believe that I've done that well.
And do you do things like visualise the race in those circumstances? Because I guess it's hard to visualise something as important as that.
Yeah, it's hard to visualise it because, like, it's hard at the minute to actually understand and believe that I'm going to be there sort of thing. So whilst it is sinking in and I realise that, yes, I'm going to the Olympics sort of thing, but right now it's hard to start to visualise and say, you know, I'm going to be standing on the start line with the greatest marathon runners of the world just now. And you don't know how it's going to pan out, whereas going into something like Berlin, and you're like, right, I know by 5 mile I want to be at this time, I want to be feeling like this. That's a lot easier to kind of visualise and get your mind around it, whereas a championship, something like the Olympics, I think it's more kind of keeping yourself calm and not getting any rush of blood to the head and trying to lead for the first 10 mile or something stupid like that.
And how did you get into running originally? What was your motivation?
Pretty much from the day I was born, I was involved in running. You know, my dad was a marathon runner. He missed a race because I was being born, which he never let us forget. And our house was kind of the training hub for him and his friends. So Sunday morning, they'd meet there, they'd go off and do their whatever 20-odd mile runs, and they'd come back. As I grew up, I started going out on the bike with them just because it was something to do. And as I was getting dragged around, watching him do 10Ks, half marathons, marathons, I would do the fun runs. But it was never at that point something where I was like, you know, I want to follow in my dad's footsteps. There was actually times when I watched the marathon and thought, I am never doing this again. This guy's collapsing in front of me, you know. And you're thinking, why are you crazy guys doing this? They're all hobbling back to the train or the bus and whatever. But yeah, I first joined the running club because my friend from school was a member and they were going to Flamingoland, the local theme park. So I wanted to go to Flamingoland. So I joined and I was still there 15 years later. So, yeah.
And when did you become like you're obviously, are you working now or are you full-time athlete?
Most people would class us as full-time athlete. About a year ago I packed in my job at a sweatshop. But I do some online coaching, which until kind of the last few weeks pretty much paid the bills more than the running did. So, yeah, that only takes up like what, maximum of 6 hours a week. But like I said, that paid the bills rather than any prize money or sponsorship or anything.
You say you still feel a bit of a club runner. Was there a point in your running path where you started to win races and you started to compete nationally? Didn't it change in mindset?
Yeah, there was actually a few years ago where I think it happens a lot with like local club runners as well. I was a member of Chesley Street, and at the time we had literally the best female distance squad going. We won all sorts. You know, we won national road relays, national cross country. And I ran Horwich 5K in 2007 and ran 16:10. That was a big breakthrough for me. And at that point, I was like, I'm it, I'm the man sort of thing, which 16:10, looking back, you're like, it's not even that fast. But yeah, kind of, I think back then I actually thought I was better than what I do now, if that makes sense. But yeah, it was from there that I thought, you know, I can start a challenge for teams. And then 2009, I got my first GB vest, my first England vest. It was a slow progression still, but it did progress from there. Yeah.
Obviously, on the cusp of Rio at the moment, everything looks great and rosy, but it's not always been...
No. There's definitely been more lows than highs.
Are you the kind of person that's good at dealing with setbacks?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm one of those people who... You can have a bad run, you know, a bad training session, a bad race, whatever, and you can kind of... I can deal with it, put it to bed and move on. Yes, you're in a mood for the rest of the day or whatever. But I understand that one bad run doesn't make you a bad athlete. And I think because the last few years as well, I've done everything by myself, I've come to kind of deal with these things a bit better because I haven't got somebody who's there mollycoddling us going, oh, never mind, you'll get over this, or, you know, wrapping you in cotton wool and looking after you. You've got to go out there and look after yourself. I've got nobody holding my hand in training. I'm doing all my track sessions, my tempos, my long runs by myself. You know, I haven't got somebody pacing us every step of a race or every step of training. So you do come that little bit more tough. And when you get the setbacks like injuries or a race doesn't go as good as you wanted, you've got to deal with it, and it is, like I say, a case of, you know, be upset about it for the rest of the day, but you wake up the next morning and you say, right, that's it. I can either let that eat away at us and cost us the rest of my career, or I can go out there, get some damn good training in, get another damn good race in, and just show myself and everyone else that, like I say, one bad run doesn't make you a bad runner.
And is there any particular sessions that you do just to give yourself a bit of confidence, to give you like a marker of, you know, where you are?
Yeah, I try not to repeat sessions, like exact sessions, too much, because you can get caught up in that, oh, last time I did that I was a second per rep quicker, or this time I'm 5 seconds per rep quicker, that means I'm going to have a brilliant race sort of thing. And a lot of your training, it depends what you've done, you know, the few days before, what the weather's like, what you're feeling like, what you've ate. You know, there's so many things can factor into how a session comes out. So I'll do very similar sessions, but like I say, I won't repeat the same session. I know people do, like, you know, once a month they'll do exactly the same session as a progress chart sort of thing. But yeah, for me, there's too many factors can affect that session. And, you know, it's like going into a marathon build up. A lot of people will do a half marathon. If you run a PB in the half marathon 5 weeks out, you're like, yes, get in, I'm in brilliant shape. But then your next time round, you're like, oh, just ran 30 seconds slower, that's it, my marathon's screwed. Doesn't always work like that. After Cardiff, I thought I was in PB shape for the half marathon. I was looking for like a sub 70. You know, I could have easily just let that totally play on my mind. But it's kind of, you've got to look at why you ran. You had a bad performance or whatever. And for me, I came down with a storm and cold the next day. So that was probably in the system and probably affected it. And you've got to just adjust the sales. And looking back at Cardiff, we think it was probably a good thing, because had I went out and ran the sub 70 that I was hoping to, would I then have got carried away and thought, oh great, this is it, I'm going to smash London, then on London at the day go, right, just sod it, let's go for a super fast time, and then blow up and risk everything. So yeah. I think Cardiff in a way was actually a good thing for me, because I then went, right, just take a step back, let the body recover from this cold, get the final few weeks in, go into it, know that I'm in good shape, I've done everything, and just see what the SOAT is.
Now, what's the rest of your training like? Do you do much conditioning work? And
yeah, I do. I'm in the gym kind of 2-3 times a week with, you know, your traditional weights, squats, deadlifts, lunges, all that kind of stuff. I'll do core and balance work probably about 3-4 times a week. And yeah,
on top of those two, on top of the gym sessions.
Yeah, so yeah, literally probably every day apart from the day that I do my long run, I'll be doing supplementary training as well. For me, it's been one of the big kind of things in my training over the last 4 years, which has helped me make the improvements that I have. Because before that, I never went to a gym. I was a runner, I wasn't an athlete. But then I got in the gym, started doing weights, and I just got stronger and more robust. When you look back, there's a big improvement on the amount of time I spent on a physio bed, which was great for me, not good for my physio. Yeah. But, you know, I wasn't getting all the little niggles that I was getting before. There was times where I'd go 3 months and just every run there was some sort of ache and pain. Whereas now, yes, you get the tiredness, ache and pain from hard training, but there's nothing where I go, that's a bit of a niggle, I'm going to have to keep an eye on that. And touch wood, since Commonwealths, I've had nothing where I've had to miss more than one run about. Yeah.
And what's your nutrition like? Do you pay much attention to that sort of thing?
Yeah, again, it's something where I've got to the point where I was like, right, I'm running 110, 120 mile a week. I'm doing all my gym, my weights, my core, getting regular physio and massage. What other areas can I now look at improving? And, you know, nutrition was the one that hit you in the face, where my nutrition wasn't that bad. You know, I wasn't one of these that lived off pizza and burgers and, you know, a load of rubbish. I did have a healthy diet, getting all the right stuff in, but it was getting the right stuff in at the right times. I contacted Renee McGregor and she went through all my nutrition stuff with us, and she came back and said, yeah, you've pretty much got it spot on. You've just got a few little tweaks, you know, a little bit more protein after a hard gym session and, you know, getting your protein shakes in and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, there wasn't that many changes to it, and I still have my cake and my chocolate, but just not every day.
I was going to say, what's the treat you allow yourself if you have a good race, something specific you like to gorge on?
Yeah, after a big race, it's normally is like, you know, the biggest kind of death burger you can find and a big thick chocolate milkshake. But yeah, you know, I'll have, like, Friday night I had pizza, and so it's not like I deny myself any of these things, because what I find is if you start restricting certain things, you just crave them more, and then you just end up going crazy over it. So yeah, if I want a pizza, I'll have a pizza. Like I said, just won't be one a day. It's probably not even one a week, it's probably once a month. Yeah, and then the last few weeks leading into a marathon, it is a case of, oh, I can't wait to have, like, you know, big burger or a curry. And then you can guarantee you'll do your marathon, you're just like, yeah, I can't face food just now. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that in Berlin. I took, like, all these treats away with us for after the marathon, and I finished, and I'd had stomach troubles during Berlin anyway, and I was just like, can't face any of this. So we ended up going for a walk, and we walked past McDonald's, and for the first time in my life, I went, that smells good. And that was it. I was straight into McDonald's. And it was more the salt on the fries that I was after.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, sometimes your body just tells you what it is you need, and, you know, you find it and have it.
And what's your plans for after Rio? Have you got anything you want to do?
I've not really looked beyond Rio just yet. A lot of people are mentioning the retirement word to us, and I just kind of give them the filthiest look ever. I'm only 37. It's far too early to retire. But the way I look at it is, I'm still running PBs, I'm still making teams, so why retire? you know, if I was getting slower and missing out on teams, yeah, it would be a good argument too. But obviously world champs next year in London, you know, you can't just give up with that on your doorstep. Immediately after Rio, enjoy the rest of the games, because I am there for an extra week. Like, once my race is finished, there's a week of the games left still. And then come home, just relax. I'll have 2 weeks of no running. Enjoy time with friends and family and doing normal things for once, you know. If I want to go out for a few drinks, I'll go out. And then probably do the Great North Run, whether that's in the elite field or in with the masses, I don't know yet. And then I've actually entered, as part of a relay team, a run bike run at Kielder. So that should be fun.
Yeah. It'll be you on the run bit.
Yes, I'm on the run, yeah. Me on a bike isn't great, so yeah, I'm going to do one of the run legs.
And I've got three questions now, which I'm going to ask sort of quick fire questions to each person I interview. And the first one is, if you could only wear one make and model of running shoe for the rest of your career, what would it be?
It would have to be Adidas, obviously. Yeah. And which one though? I'd probably go for the Boston, because if you're only allowed one model, the Boston can cover everything. You can do your mileage in it, but it's also light enough to do like your tempos and your racing in it. So, yeah, Boston. Yeah.
Perfect. If you could recommend either a book, magazine, film, or podcast, what would you recommend?
Probably my favourite actual real running book is Charlie Spedden's, because he goes into a lot. Like, I know Charlie, you know, obviously he's a Northeast hero and that, but it goes into where he came from, how he rose up through the ranks, and a lot into the psychology of it as well, which obviously he's not a psychologist, but he explains his mental kind of side to it and his thought processes. And, you know, that bit where he talks about sitting down in the pub with a piece of paper saying, you know, what do I want, when do I want it, how am I going to get it? That's what every athlete needs to do at some point in their career.
Yeah.
You're
the second person that said that, actually.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
Yep.
And the final question is, in your opinion, what's the greatest running performance of all time?
Paula's world record. Yeah, it's just absolutely mind-blowing. And at the time, you know, I was sitting watching it on the TV and I was just like, yeah, this is phenomenal. And, you know, it's what, 13 years ago now? And I actually did my run after watching that. And I tried to run 1 mile at that pace back then, you know. It was hard work for us. And back then that kind of hit us. Looking at her splits for it and you're like sitting there going, this is just crazy fast. And one of the things that really hit it home to me, I'm friends with Paula and she helps us out quite a lot now. And last September, I ran 32:15 for 10K. And I texted her and I was like, oh my God, I've just run this massive PB sort of thing. And then I looked at her and went, she ran 4 back-to-back 10Ks faster than this.
That's
mad. Yeah, that just kind of was the point where it just really blew my mind and went, oh my God. And when you speak to her, though, she's like, yeah, I still could have gone faster.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
That course isn't fast, I wouldn't. London,
well, back
is it?
Then she even had the cobbles in.
Did she?
Yeah, it was before they changed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I would love to see her, like, literally on that day, but on the Berlin course. That would have just been. Yeah, it's scary to think.
Excellent. So, good luck.
Thank you.
How many weeks away were you away now from Rio?
We are. I think it was 7 weeks yesterday.
Good luck in 7 weeks' time.
Yeah.
And I'll be there in Amsterdam. I might just listen out for the British loony man.
Yeah.
And try to find a good place, and I'll give you a massive shout at some stage.
Cool.
Hopefully it won't interrupt your concentration as you go around.
No, it won't. It'll probably, you know, hopefully it'll be at that time where I need that kick up the backside. So, yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'll wait till about mile 10, maybe, when you're...
Yeah,
when
between you're 8 and 10 normally. That's when it kind of starts to kick.
Perfect. Yeah. Right, I'll be there.
Cool.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ellie.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.